Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, listeners. Before we start, let me just mention my podcast sponsor. That's iTalki. They're the perfect service if you're interested in improving your spoken fluency in English. With iTalki, you can find qualified native speakers of English and arrange conversations or lessons whenever you want via Skype. They have thousands of teachers to choose from, and you can arrange classes around your schedule. The cool thing is that iTalki are offering you, my listeners, a free lesson. For all the details, visit teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. Welcome to the podcast. In this episode, I'm talking again to my brother James, who has appeared on this podcast quite a lot over the years, usually talking about things like books, films, music, and other bits of pop culture. And in fact, that's what we're talking about in this episode too. The conversation is about 90 minutes long, so if this was the 1990s, then we could have recorded almost the entire thing on a C90 cassette tape and then just posted it to you. Do you remember those days when we all used cassette tapes for our music? And you had to rewind them and stick labels on them, and sometimes the tape would get all chewed up inside your Walkman. Ah, good times. Anyway, this is a 90-minute plus mega ramble with James that covers quite a lot of different things, but I think that's what you've come to expect from this podcast over the years, isn't it? I think so. Rambling and tangents and conversations like that. You're mainly listening to this for your English, of course, in the knowledge that listening to natural conversations like this is generally a healthy thing for your language learning. Your English is more likely to benefit from this if you know generally what we're talking about throughout the episode, even if you don't get every single word. So to help you follow the whole thing, let me now give you a quick overview of what you're going to hear in this conversation. First, James tells us about how he's been feeling a bit unwell recently after he got something in his eye while skateboarding. And we kick off the episode by explaining a few nice bits of language for talking about that. Then he describes a recent trip he did to the French Alps where he did some snowboarding. After that, we talk about his experiences of doing stand-up comedy for the first time. He recently started doing it. And we talk about what he's learnt from that particular challenge, including some details about coming up with funny ideas and dealing with the nervous tension that you get from speaking in front of people. We also talk about the recent gig that I did with Paul Taylor at the Comedy Store in London. James was in the audience at that show. There are lots of tangents. Tangents, this is when you kind of break off from the main topic and start talking about something else. So there are lots of tangents, moments when we're just sort of making each other laugh, and also references to some things that you might not know about. For example, there are some references to comedy TV shows, including a tangent about the BBC science fiction comedy show Red Dwarf, which is actually the second time that show has randomly been mentioned on the podcast recently. And we also mention Alan Partridge, who I did some episodes about in October. We mention the new film about Laurel and Hardy. Laurel and Hardy, that's the old comedy double act. Those two comedians from the black and white film era. There's a new film about them. And the film is called Stan and Ollie, and it stars Steve Coogan in one of the roles. Steve Coogan is the actor who plays Alan Partridge, in fact. So Steve Coogan recently has starred in this film about Laurel and Hardy. It's called Stan and Ollie. James saw the film recently, so he shares some of his thoughts on that. And we then make fun of some TV voiceovers and advertising that you see on television these days. Following that, we talk about a couple of books that James has read recently, including the Alan Partridge book Nomad. And then we talk about the Beastie Boys book, which was published at the end of last year. I'm not sure if you know about the Beastie Boys. Some of you definitely will, but others might not. They were a very famous band in their heyday. Three guys from New York called Adam Yauch, or MCA, Adam Horovitz, or Ad Rock, and Michael Diamond, also known as Mike D. So three guys from New York that made rap, punk, and jazzy instrumental music in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Sadly, the band stopped making music after Adam Yauch died in 2012. So that's the Beastie Boys. I'm pretty sure that the Beastie Boys were famous in many countries around the world. I know that they were really popular in Japan, for example. They released their memoir last year, the Beastie Boys book, which James got as a present for Christmas. And I also listened to the audiobook version recently. It's a collection of stories about the band written by the two surviving members. So we talk about the Beastie Boys, what they meant to us when we were younger, because we are both big fans. And we then talk about the pros and cons of listening to music on cassette tapes in the 1990s. So there you go. That's the roadmap for this episode. This is a long episode, so don't forget to hit that pause button and come back later if you've got stuff to do. And if you haven't got stuff to do, then you can just brew up a nice pot of tea, put your feet up, and listen on. All right, so now that you've got your brew in your hand and maybe a pack of chocolate digestive biscuits open on the table in front of you, let's get started properly. Hello, James. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks. I'm not too bad, thanks. I've been a bit under the weather recently.
You've been a bit under the weather, really?
That's our idiom of the day.
There you go. We'll kick off with a bit of language, why not? You've been a bit under the weather, so are you still under the weather?
I'm feeling a bit better, thanks.
Okay. What's been the nature of your problem? What's the problem?
I got something in my eye on Sunday when I was skating. A bit of grit went in my eye.
Grit.
And it seemed okay, but then on Monday it kind of swelled up a bit, the sort of eyelid, upper eyelid. Mm. So I went to the doctor and it's okay. It's just a sort of nasty sty, I think they're called.
A sty.
They're horrible. It's fine. It's just I look a bit like a zombie in one side of my face because I've got a zombie eye.
Lovely. So you've been feeling a bit under the weather. You've got a bit of grit in your eye. What is grit? That's what the world is wondering.
It's a small piece of non-organic material.
What?
It's a bit of stone.
Yeah. Okay. It's a little bit of stone, like a tiny little...
No, I didn't actually see what it was. It was that small. But you know when you get something in your eye?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I always think grit is... Like when it's in England, when...
It's probably grit's a bit too big. It probably wasn't grit. It was probably a tiny flake of paint or something.
Like a speck of...
Dust.
A speck of dust. No, it's bigger than that.
Non-specified material. Bigger than dust, but smaller than grit.
Right. Like a little crumb of stone. I don't... Anyway, so you've got a bit of stone.
A particle.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good word. A particle of something in your eye. Okay. But anyway, I'm glad that you're feeling a bit better. You didn't go into work today, though, did you?
No, I phoned in sick, or I called in sick.
All right, there's another good one.
It wasn't a sickie, which is when you phone in sick when you're not really ill.
That's like to...
Because you fancy lying in bed, or you've got a hangover or something.
That's to throw a sickie or take a sickie, right?
Throw a sickie, do a sickie.
Okay, and that's when you are not actually sick, but you call in to tell them that you are sick in order to get the day off.
I would never do that.
Really?
I was genuinely... I think everyone does it sometimes, okay? You've broken me down already.
Yeah.
I think in Australia and New Zealand, they have sort of like mental health days or duvet days, they call them, where you don't actually have to lie. Like you get five a year or something, where if you just can't face Monday morning, you're allowed a duvet day.
Really? This is Australia. Yeah, g'day, but g'day, boss. Yeah, I'm not going to come in today.
Call a duvet day?
Yeah, going to call in with a bit of a duvet day, mate. So have you ever thrown a sickie?
Of course.
Yeah? Is there a right and wrong way to do it?
I'd just like to say again, this wasn't a sickie. I was genuinely ill.
Yeah.
And I needed to clean my eye and just generally look after myself a bit.
Yes.
But if you're going to throw a sickie or do a sickie, you could possibly try and sound really under the weather, so like muffly voice a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It helps if you go into detail, I find. So if you say, describe an unpleasant meal you had the night before that's not gone down very well. And if you go into detail, like, oh, I had a dodgy curry last night, they're already having horrible visions.
All right.
And they'll want to hang up as soon as possible. So you just go into detail. Yeah. So what's a really horrible thing you can imagine eating?
Like, I ate loads of prawns that I just...
I had a dodgy prawn cocktail last night. And honestly, mate, oh, seriously, I don't think I can leave the house. And they're already thinking, just stop talking.
Prawn curry. I ate a prawn curry with, like...
A prawn madras.
Yeah. That's right. It was a seafood curry in a restaurant that actually got closed down, like literally at the end of the evening. The health and safety came into the restaurant and closed it down there. They were waving badges around and like they cordoned off the whole restaurant with a special kind of tape, like a police tape. And they were like, this restaurant has been officially closed. Ladies and gents, you're going to have to go home. And you're like, oh, I didn't finish my prawn curry. And then you're like, so, you know, I'm feeling. And then you describe in great detail the night that you had where you kept having to go to the toilet or something.
If you want to go strong, you know, no fear.
Yeah.
I mean, some people might find that if you're in quite a good job, you probably don't have to go to those lengths. That's more for your kind of student type job, working in a pub where they won't really be very nice to you.
Mm.
You have to go in quite hardcore for jokes like that. Because if you just say, I'm not feeling very well, they'll say, I don't care. Come in. You're booked.
Yeah.
Come and do your shift. Stop being a wuss.
Right.
I'm not calling. You know what I mean? Or they'll say, you have to have a doctor's note or something like that.
But
if you're in a sort of slightly better job, they'll probably... If you're not taking the piss and you do it a couple of times a year, then they'll probably let it go.
Yeah, because they're like, it's James. You know, I think
he's a solid part of the team.
He's a solid guy. He's a solid part of the team.
He helped us turn around that last project in record time. if he's saying he's feeling under the weather, let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, guys.
Give him the benefit of the doubt. We're going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I'd like to state again, I am genuinely ill and I'm going to go in tomorrow. I have to take the day off.
Just for the record, for legal purposes, James is genuinely ill and I believe it because I've seen his eye on FaceTime and I think it's looking better than it did the other day, I think. So anyway, that's good. So, all right. Let me just run through those phrases again. To be under the weather, you got a bit of grit in your eye. Your eyelid swelled up or it became swollen, in a little sty in your eye. This is really painting a lovely picture of you in this episode. Feeling a bit off colour. You called in sick.
Which is fine.
Which is fine.
Well, these days you're more likely to actually text, I find.
Oh, right, okay.
Which means you don't have to put on the ill voice and talk about the prawn madras and stuff.
Hide under the duvet and, like, you know, put your head under a pillow before you make the phone call. But if that's calling in sick is legitimate, but then if you're faking it, then that's to throw a sickie or do a sickie or take a sickie or something.
This is just for your language understanding.
Purely for language teaching purposes.
We do not endorse.
I do not.
And these circumstances,
I do not condone the act of lying to your employer. I think it's unacceptable and it's reckless with the economy, especially at a time like this. Anyway, So good. You're feeling a bit better. You're feeling a bit better.
Yeah, definitely going to go in tomorrow.
You're definitely going to go in tomorrow. Okay, all right then. So what have you been up to, other than being a bit under the weather? What have you been up to then?
Went skiing / snowboarding.
Skiing / snowboarding?
With work.
Did you actually do...
Pretty amazing.
Were you skiing or snowboarding?
I was snowboarding very badly.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not very good at snowboarding.
What made you choose to do the snowboarding?
Because I skateboard, so I thought it would be easier. And it is, to a certain extent. The balance is kind of the same. Uh-huh. And it's easier being on one board rather than two skis, I think. Because I did try skiing years and years and years ago on a school ski trip.
Mm.
But getting good seems to be a bit harder. But I think I'm still snowboarding like I'm skateboarding, which is a completely different set of moves, really. It's a different edge, different turning technique.
Right.
So it was a little bit frustrating at times because I wasn't advancing as quick as I'd like to, but it was beautiful up there.
Yeah.
Chamonix. Paid for by work. I won't mention my work, but they're very good.
Chamonix is in France. It's like you're up in the French Alps.
Yeah, it was just for 3 days, but it was ace. Yeah.
Yeah. Wicked. Okay. Did you fall over a lot?
Yep.
Because
and also it's strapped to your feet. You know, in skis when you come off, they break away from your ski boots, or they will under pressure. But with a snowboard, you're in there. You're not coming out. The bindings that I had, anyway.
And isn't
so it feels quite dangerous when you fall off, that you're tied, both feet are tied to this flipping giant plank of wood.
Well, it's not wood.
Well, it's not wood, it's fiberglass, but you know what I mean.
I do.
Some sort of resin, epoxy.
It's a bit Alan Partridge, isn't it?
Yeah.
To get specific about
it's a lacquered epoxy vinyl.
A lacquered epoxy
it's fiberglass vinyl, compound composite.
Yeah, concave plank. okay.
But I did some red runs, did some blue runs.
Red runs and blue runs. Which ones are the more difficult?
Well, red are pretty scary. I think black is the scariest, but felt more extreme than some of the other blacks I've done in previous years. So I don't know, someone else is probably pointing out red and black are the other way around, but I don't know.
All right,
beyond my ability level.
Okay.
I'd say a red.
Okay, that's good.
It's just quite hair raising.
Yeah, I bet it is. Yeah, okay, cool. What about you've been doing stand-up, right?
Only a very limited amount of stand-up. I think I've done 6 gigs.
Uh-huh.
So, and I did the same course that you did, Logan Murray's comedy course, in the winter of last year.
Yeah, it's called the Absolute Beginners Stand-Up Comedy Course, isn't it? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
And it's run by this chap. I don't know why I suddenly started speaking posh there. It's run by this chap, Logan Murray. It's run by Logan
Wonderful
Murray.
Wonderful teacher. Excellent bloke.
Terrific bloke.
Amazing hair.
Amazing hair. Absolutely wonderful.
Defies gravity and all forms of aging.
Wonderful hair.
His secret is comedy.
The hair alone is worth paying...
Five stars.
Paying the ticket price to see the hair alone. Just the hair on its own. Anyway, but so you went to see... You did Logan Murray's stand-up comedy course, right?
Yeah.
Like late last year, autumn last year or something?
Yeah.
Okay. So what made you do that?
Because you'd enjoyed it so much, and I was feeling I wasn't doing enough interesting stuff, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just thought it would be good fun, and I thought it would be a challenge.
And what's...
Very fashionable these days, challenges.
Yeah, like... yeah.
It was a challenge, yeah.
Everyone needs a challenge in there. Look, guys, you need a challenge in your life. you're feeling at a loose end. You don't know what to do with yourself.
Get
yourself a challenge. You've got to get fixed, measurable goals. FMG. Fixed, measurable, FMOGA. Fixed, memorable, objective, goal aims. Challenges.
Yeah.
So you decided you wanted a challenge.
And thought it'd be good, good fun. You know, if you, it's guaranteed to be some laughs along the way, you'd think.
You'd think.
Doing stand-up comedy in a workshop scenario, you'd think would be...
And were there laughs along the way?
There were. Immediately and continuously. So that was successful.
So what did you actually do? Because the point of the course is to teach people or help people who've never done any stand-up comedy at all in their lives to help them to be able to do 5 minutes of stand-up on stage in front of an audience, right?
Initially, they just get you, he gets you kind of relaxed and talking about yourself and talking out loud in a group, but kind of tricks you into doing it somehow through some sort of games and situation type
role play scenarios.
I'm struggling to explain, but
correct. Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're talking out loud. I think the first he gives you like homework tasks to come in the next week with, and I think the first one was write a thank you list. So that's quite open ended. Some people did pretty much straight up thank you lists to as if they were accepting an award or something, or some people just thanked prominent people in their lives. Some people went for a very silly route. I can't remember all of them.
Were those things funny though? Like that was the first.
Well, some were and some weren't. But I think the emphasis was just to get you talking and out loud and presenting. And it didn't really matter initially, but most people had funny things in there.
Yeah. Do you remember what
that was quite good.
Do you remember what was in your thank you list?
I did a few different little bits.
Uh-huh.
I did bits about family, I did bits about a dream sponsor list. Like you know when a sports person wins something and they thank their sponsors.
Right.
And I did one about mum.
What was the thing about mum?
Thanks to my mum for being a great mother. And for her catchphrase, careful.
careful.
Thanks to my dad for every time we got in the car with our friends, he'd say something like, put on a CD and say something like, Beatles for sale, side one, track two, great drumming.
Right, that's kind of, he's famous for saying that, isn't he?
It was hilarious, yeah.
Amongst our friends. It's actually a true story that did actually happen. Apparently they got
in. It's just like being a radio. It's like DJ in a car with you,
being in the car with Alan Partridge or something, like he's like, don't worry lads, I'll take you home, and they're like, oh okay, and all right, James and Luke's dad, and then they get in the car. It was like Matt and Woody or something. They got in the car with him, and he was driving along, and he stuck a cassette in the tape player, and he's like,
I think it was a CD actually.
Beatles for sale, side one, track two, great drumming.
And then the song started.
Right.
I did my sponsor list, which was like Holston Pills, Curry Paradise.
These are the people who would sponsor you.
Independent Trucks.
Independent Trucks for skateboards.
I can't remember. Loads and loads and loads of them. But the one, I can't remember. Like Curry Houses and...
all the things that basically, you know, the kind of companies that you would imagine would endorse you.
I'd like to be endorsed by, yeah.
Curry restaurants.
But I can't remember the rest. There was loads.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was kind of just getting yourself,
getting everyone talking and sort of ad-libbing a little bit. And there's a small stage in the corner of the room because it's downstairs in a pub. And, he gets everyone to stand up on stage in front of everyone and do a short bit. It may be you just stand there and say your name or say something really basic.
Yeah.
But just with confidence.
Yeah.
And there's another bit where you have to get up and you have to do a press conference and you imagine that you're a politician.
Yeah.
And that people pose a question to you or the other people pose as journalists and they're all shouting questions at you and you have to think on your feet.
Yeah. I love that game.
And that's quite fun.
Yeah, so that was my favorite. That was one of my favorite games.
I bet you were really good, weren't you?
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I was fucking brilliant. Yeah,
you just swore.
I did, didn't I?
You're allowed to swear on this, aren't you?
I'm allowed to swore. Yeah, I'm allowed to swear as well.
I'm a bit under the weather. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It means I can't talk properly.
Yeah, the symptoms of this eye infection are grammar mistakes.
Yeah, it can happen. If you Google it up on the internet, Google that up. I mean, if you look that up on the internet.
Google it up on the internet.
Yeah, that's the good thing about the internet. You can find something to support any argument that you want. Within, you just Google two terms together. Oh, yeah, really? Look, that happened to this guy.
If you don't,
that must be true.
If you don't find the evidence to support your argument, just keep Googling.
Yeah, you'll find some deranged lunatic sooner or later.
On page 9 of the Google search results. Because, like, whoever gets to page 9? Have you ever got to, like, beyond page 3 or 4 of Google search results?
No.
Because, you know, you get the first page and you can actually go through each page and page after page after page. And I don't know if anyone has ever got to, like, page 19 of the... And there might be undiscovered information that's on the internet that no one's ever got to because they've not gone further than page 3 of the Google search results. They're, you know, there could be like major discoveries that no one knows about.
My Twitter page.
Like your Twitter page, yeah, where Brexit, for example, has all been sorted out by these blogs that no one's reading.
Anyway, where were we? Weren't we talking
so
about
we were
something?
Talking about you doing the stand-up comedy course, right? So, okay, so they do different exercises in games. The idea is that they...
Yeah, they get you up there and get you on stage and get you confident. I mean, in theory, anyway. It's still terrifying. It doesn't stop being terrifying, but you get comfortable with the group and then you start thinking up bits to do, funny lines, and he encourages you to... Even any small kind of funny idea, you can stretch out and add to and more and more and more until you've developed... It may be a tiny idea that gets developed way beyond your first thought.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Can you describe it any better than I
No,
just
I think
did?
You're right. That he also teaches you certain kind of techniques, like, for example, the idea of switching off your editor, which was one of the things that stuck with me, which is just the idea that whenever you... Let's say if you're about to start trying to write some comedy material, or if you're on stage and you're maybe even... ad-libbing or something like that, like improvising, there is this voice in your head which is like, no, you can't say that. Don't say that. Like, just constantly editing you. And in normal, polite company, the editor is very important because it stops you looking like a total psycho, weird person. But in comedy, you've got to switch that voice off completely and let all the ideas just come flooding through without... sort of worrying about whether they are socially acceptable or whether they make you look like a crazy person or something. You've got to switch that side of your brain off and just let the ideas all flow out. And that's the key to kind of being creative, and just then creative ideas can come. And later on, you can sort of edit them and change them to make them more palatable for an audience or something. But the key to coming up with ideas is just to kind of just open your mind, man, and just, you know, let all the ideas come flying out without judging yourself. Because, you know, most people, if they were given the task of doing something funny or going up and being funny or writing some jokes or writing some personal stories, they would, a lot of the time, they'd just be like, oh, no, I can't do that. I couldn't say that. And that's like defeats the whole point from the very beginning. And so you've got to learn how to, it's a risk. It's like kind of taking a risk of like switching off your editor. Because the risk is that, you will say something that's going to be potentially embarrassing or will make you look strange, but you can't do comedy without, you know, first taking that risk. So yeah, that's the thing that stuck with me. But for me at the beginning of the course, I was very uncomfortable and I didn't find it very enjoyable at all. I just found it really, really awkward that we were doing these games, which I didn't really understand and which were not funny. Like, no one was being funny for a few sessions. They were just really awkward, unfunny experiences. And I was just thinking, this is terrible. And I just feel so uncomfortable all the time. And then in the middle of the course I suddenly couldn't sleep, and suddenly it's like this switching off your editor thing that he'd been asking us to practice suddenly worked, and I suddenly got inundated with lots of ideas and thoughts, and I couldn't stop writing things down, and I got lots of funny ideas out of it, and in the end it all seemed to come together, and I kind of like got into it a lot more. And it was great. So that was fun. But did you learn anything about yourself while doing the course, man?
I don't think so, no.
Did you forget anything about yourself while you were doing it? What about public speaking? I mean, have you ever done a lot of public speaking? Like, have you ever done presentations at work and things?
No, I haven't, actually. I think the only thing I did was your best man speech.
Yeah, which was excellent. It was really, really good, that was. At my wedding. Not our wedding. We didn't get married, you and me.
At your wedding, to your wife.
To my wife, that's right. You did a speech because you were the best man. And it was great. It was really funny and really good. But other than that, you hadn't done a lot of public speaking. No. So, I mean, you know, have you learned anything about public speaking, do you think?
Yeah, I'm still not that keen on it. I mean, I enjoy coming up with the ideas.
Mm.
I'm still not sold. I mean, some people who do stand-up just love being up on stage, and you can tell.
Yeah,
they don't want to leave and they want to stay there, and they don't care if they've got anything particularly funny to say. They just want to be up there in front of people.
Yeah.
And there's a certain type. But the thing is, that's kind of more important, because you can learn technique and material as you go.
Right.
You can pick material up and hone a set. I think the most important thing is to really want to be doing it.
Mm, yeah.
I think that's my biggest problem, even though I have enjoyed a couple of the gigs I've done. I still don't have this drive to get up in front of people.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a big flaw if you're a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people really want to be up there.
Standing up is quite...
I don't particularly. Yeah, it's not the standing up that I'm objecting to. I'm quite happy standing up. It's just getting in front of a room full of people and going, hey, everyone, I'm really funny.
I'm going to prove it.
Listen to me.
Yeah.
Thing is, I think I am really funny, and I want people to listen to me. No, I don't. But I don't particularly have that desire to jump up in front of a group of strangers.
But there's nothing wrong with that, you know.
I know there's nothing wrong with it.
If you genuinely have some funny things to say, and, you know, because
I mean, I've kind of used that to my advantage. People said my style was very deadpan.
Yeah.
So it's the opposite of being very excitable and kind of being, hey, everyone. If you can come on there and look really sort of over it, it's kind of can work.
I mean, if you come on as if, and you're like, oh, I'm not really sure I even want to be here.
I don't know. I mean, I've only done six of them. I need to do a lot more before I know what I'm talking about. But at the same time, I don't quite want to give up yet. I feel like I've done the hard bit, which is doing the first few.
Mm.
And none of them haven't died. That's a comedy expression, to die.
Die on your ass.
On your ass or die on stage.
I've talked about those expressions recently on the podcast, actually. To die on your ass, die on stage, to bomb as well is the other one.
Yeah, well, I haven't bombed or died so far.
Okay.
But watching the videos back, I'm still not as confident as I need to be.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm going to try and make myself do some more.
It's quite difficult to relax, especially if you've never really spoken in public before. I mean, that's a big learning curve.
You're a teacher, so...
Yeah, I had the advantage of having spent a lot of time standing up in front of people, so that was kind of an advantage for me. But yeah, if you've never done it before, I mean, when I started teaching, I was like horribly nervous, and you can't control your body in a way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, do you remember I did that stand-up gig with you?
Yeah.
In France,
that
in
was
Paris.
Was that the first time you ever did stand-up?
That was the first time I ever did stand-up before I'd done the course.
Mm.
And I thought I'd give it a go, and there was about eight people there, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think so.
It was just other comedians, and it was a really quiet night.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll give it a go. These people seem okay. They're not going to lynch me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what material I did, but it wasn't very good.
You did stuff about how... having Donald Trump as the president, it's like we are living in Back to the Future 2. And in that weird timeline in Back to the Future 2 where Biff is president. It's like
everyone's saying that now, but this was when he'd just become president. And it wasn't really a widely sort of shared idea.
Yeah.
I think people there said, oh, I haven't heard that one before, or I haven't heard that angle before. So it was kind of had potential, but...
Yeah.
Looking back at the video, I'm like shuffling from foot to foot, looking sort of caged bear, looking really, really uncomfortable and kind of not projecting, sort of rushing through the words too quickly, mumbling and looking at the floor. So not a great performance.
It's tricky, though. It's really tricky. It takes a lot of time before you can actually start to get control over the way you are physically and the body language and stuff. You know, like when you're nervous, the nerves take control and mean that you are restricted in your body. You're like a prisoner of your own body, in a sense. When I first started teaching, for example, I couldn't move my head from left to right. My neck would get stiff because I was nervous. So I could
nervous tension.
Yeah, I couldn't look to the left. I'd have to shift my shoulders all the way around. I was like,
so
Robert,
a bit like Crichton.
Crichton from Red Dwarf. Yeah, I was like that. Like, it's me. And so,
any Red Dwarf fans out there?
Yeah, maybe.
You nerds.
There may be some Red Dwarf fans. I hope so. I need to do an episode about Red Dwarf.
You should.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary about the making of it.
Yeah.
And one thing that cracked me up is it coincided with the sort of Manchester music explosion of the late 80s and early 90s.
Just before
They were filming up in Manchester.
Just before you carry on, we need to just briefly say, and again, I've mentioned Red Dwarf on the podcast recently in another conversation, but Red Dwarf is a comedy TV show that used to be on the BBC, and it's about a group of people who are basically stuck in space. It's very funny, and there are
very nerdy.
It's
about the uncoolest TV program you can imagine admitting to be into to a girl. All girls hate it.
No, they don't.
They do.
No, man. No, they don't.
I've never met one that likes it. I've been watching it before, and they come in and they say with like, as if you've just been caught doing something really bad.
Red Dwarf.
You're watching Red Dwarf. And they just leave with like, you've just dropped about 10 levels in my estimation.
No, you're wrong. There are some awesome geeky girls out there who love Red Dwarf. Have faith, James. Have faith in womankind. Because there are
They have more sense than being to Red Dwarf. That's what I'm saying. They're more intelligent.
Not all of them. No, there's nothing wrong with...
And they don't get off on really badly filmed comedy sci-fi. No, it wasn't badly filmed.
It's not true, because loads of women love Doctor Who, and that's full of cheap special effects and stuff like that. No.
I wasn't being too serious anyway.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, loads of girls like Red Dwarf, and Red Dwarf is clever because it's got loads of science references to physics and astrophysics and also science fiction.
It's classic sci-fi. It's good quality sci-fi because sci-fi is just like, what if this happened?
Yeah.
And then you treat it as if it's really a real scenario.
Yeah.
That's what all sci-fi is. So like War of the Worlds is like, what if Martians actually landed and they weren't friendly?
Yeah.
And then you treat that as if it's absolutely serious, thought out exploration of what would happen in that scenario.
Yeah.
So you're not just making up ridiculous. Obviously it would take a few days for the army to get involved, and they'd probably have anticipated that, so they probably have weapons that we don't understand, and they probably have new ways of breeding that we don't understand, and you take an idea and then you apply it very seriously.
And also other important questions, like how would Tom Cruise respond to the emergency?
By punching it in the face, probably.
Running.
Oh no, that's Will Smith.
Will Smith punched an alien. He's like, welcome to Earth, bitch, or something like that, right? That's what Will...
Welcome to the project. No.
Welcome to the project. I mean, Earth.
I mean, a film studio. Anyway, how the fuck did we get on this? Red Dwarf, rewind.
Red Dwarf. I don't know how we ended up talking about Red Dwarf. Oh, shit. We got lost in a cul-de-sac.
No, we do. I'm going to work this out.
Do a U-turn. Go back to the main highway that we were traveling along. I really can't remember. Public speaking, nerves, feeling. That's it. Feeling nervous.
Oh, you looking like fucking flipping Crichton from Red Dwarf. That's where it came from. Jesus, this is a ramble cast.
Yeah. When I was a teacher and I felt nervous, I've got all stiff in my body and my neck. And so I had to turn my whole body to look to the left or right, like a character from the science fiction comedy show Red Dwarf. The character is an android. And so he kind of moves around like a robot. And that's what I felt like when I first started teaching.
But so you look like an android when you're stressed, and I look like a caged animal when I'm stressed.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't help it, though. And even gigs that I've thought went okay, watching them back, I'm definitely not pausing. You need to be relaxed when you're delivering jokes. Not that it's that fast. We've got to wait for people to laugh and to get the joke.
Yeah.
And then you say something. You don't just talk over them laughing, which was something I was doing.
It's also not just for comedy. It's for anything. Like if you're doing a kick-ass presentation, like an awesome sales presentation, guys.
You've got to pause and let them absorb what you've just said.
Yeah, and observe.
And have a little
observe what you just said. Watch this, guys. Absorb this. Absorb this.
Don't learn absorb. It's not a real word.
What? Absorb? No, that's not a word. Absorb is like absorb this, like a sponge would absorb water.
Oh, man. I'm really sorry. What do people think listening to
this?
The
more you apologize to my audience, the more it means that we're doing the right thing. You know that feeling that you have of like, oh, I should apologize for this? That means that we're hitting the sweet spot. That's the thing you need to know.
How do you know that?
Just instinct. Maybe my instinct is completely wrong, pointing in the wrong direction completely.
Probably is. Like my sense of direction.
Yeah, maybe I'm completely wrong about that. But I have a feeling that trust me on this one. So, all right, that's doing stand-up. All right.
Bloody hell. I'm going to do some more. No, I'm nowhere near the standard that you've attained these days. You're definitely several plateaus above me.
Yeah, I took it to the next plateau, didn't I?
Yeah, and beyond. You did a gig at the Comedy Store recently.
Yeah.
Supporting
Paul Taylor.
What's his name? Paul Taylor. WTF France, Paul Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were the warm-up guy.
Well, I did half an hour.
That's a pretty good warm-up.
Yeah, because he needed half an hour to film some scenes in a pub across the road with his, you know, video crew. And then so he needed the audience to be entertained for half an hour while he was filming. And then the film crew followed him from the pub over the road across the street and into the venue. And then I was a bit stressed out that we wouldn't do the transition very well because it was going to be filmed in one single shot, like something from a Martin Scorsese film or something. They were going to follow Paul. The camera's going to follow him all the way through the pub, across the street.
They actually did do that, though, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And then they followed him into the comedy venue, into the Comedy Store, down the stairs, around the back of the venue. And then I was told Paul has entered the building, and then I had to wrap up my set, and I had to then say, well, you know, that's it, and like end on some sort of thing that made them all laugh so that in the video they hear laughter. And then you hear me say, that's my time, but please welcome onto the stage a very funny man, Mr. Paul Taylor. And then Paul comes up onto the stage, and actually we managed to get the transition to work very well. It went without any errors or problems, which was good. But yes,
when do we get to see the final edit?
I think it's in March is when that episode of it's actually Stereo Trip. That's the name of the show.
Oh, that's true. I watched the teaser episode because they're not all available on YouTube yet, are they? Because it's Canal Plus is pushing it.
He's uploaded
promoting it.
They uploaded the first 10 minutes of some of the episodes onto YouTube. So there's one about Germany, there's one about Italy.
It's very good. If you get Canal Plus, check it out. Check out Paul Taylor's stuff.
Stereo Trip is the name of this show. And we were filming for the episode of Stereo Trip that was all about the UK. And so that day Paul was filming scenes and interviews with different people about stereotypes for the UK and talking about them and deciding if they were actually true or not. And we filmed a few scenes at the bar of the Comedy Store that I don't think you saw that bit. And we were doing some stuff we were doing stuff about directness in communication style. And so we filmed these little clips. And so I think probably those clips are going to be used as well. I was kind of being used as an actor in the clips. And so basically the way it worked is that Paul would do a kind of direct, say something direct. they'd film a little scene with him saying something very direct, and then I would do the kind of British indirect version.
The English translation of how he should say it.
And there's, so there's him robbing the bar and saying, you know, put your hands in the air, give me all the money. And then it cuts to me going, if you don't mind just popping your hands in the air. And, you know, I don't suppose you could, you know, give me some of the money. No? Okay. Sorry. And then, like, leaving and, you know, and other things like a girl knocks Paul's iPhone out of his hand and it breaks the screen. And he's like, you broke the screen, for God's sake. And then it happens to me and I'm like, it's all right. It's probably my fault. Sorry. You know, as she just walks away, ignoring me. So
Sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah. So that could be fun. When the video should come out in March, I think, and I think some of that will be available free on YouTube. So I guess I'll post, you know, my listeners will know about that when it arrives. But yeah, the show was good. So I did half an hour and then Paul did half an hour. And yeah, the half an hour that I did, yeah, it went all right, didn't it?
It went great.
It was really fun to play at the Comedy Store as well because it's such a good venue. I'd always wanted to play there. So it's kind of like a dream come true, you know, for me.
Well done. Yeah. Shame it was fake for a TV show. Only joking, it wasn't fake.
Shut your mouth.
No, it was quality. I thought your set was as good as, if not better, than Paul's.
Really? Well.
I am biased.
You are biased, aren't you? So biased in favour of your brother, I suppose.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah, it was really good fun. And, you know, one of these days, I mean, I'll get myself a one-man show or I'll get some sort of more regular...
You've got enough material now. You could do a good half hour easily. You could do an hour.
I've got an hour at least, yeah. I've done an hour before. Man.
Go to Edinburgh and do an hour.
No, I'm not going to Edinburgh. It's
don't go to Edinburgh.
No, Edinburgh, it's saturated. It's oversaturated. With comedians, the Edinburgh Festival, there's so many comedians you can't even breathe for comedians.
But you might get lucky and get a good review, and I think what do I know? I know nothing.
No, you're right, but you know what, going to Edinburgh for a month, for the whole month, or even for a couple of weeks, it's extremely expensive. You don't make any money and it's exhausting, and you know, I've got like a child to bring up.
Yeah,
I can't just disappear to Edinburgh and do comedy there. No, I'm all right. I've got my podcast, and maybe I'll do a show in Paris in a bit once I've kind of done a few other things with the work that I'm doing. Maybe then
you've got your premiere podcast thing now as well.
Premiere podcast. Yeah,
is that what it's called?
Premium.
Is this going to be on premium?
It could be.
Come on.
I think this is going to be...
Why am I not surprised? This is going to be a free bonus episode. Giving away free with a box of cornflakes. Download one podcast and get this one free, even though the first one was already free.
Yeah. No, this will be a normal episode because the thing about the premiere or premium...
Premium. Are they more grammar-focused, are they?
Yeah, it's more language-oriented.
Well, I haven't even heard any. I'm not a premium member, so I don't get to hear them.
I'll flip you some login details. I'll flip you over some login codes.
Well, just send me the MP3 files.
I'll just send you the files. Yeah, I did a few episodes about Alan Partridge last year, and then I did...
They weren't premium, though.
No, they were just normal.
I listened to them.
Yeah. But then I did some premium episodes just focusing only on bits of language that came up in those episodes.
So you can learn to speak like Alan.
You can learn to speak like Alan, but you can also just learn all the language that came up in the normal episodes of the podcast about Alan Partridge. And
what's this? It's a cast iron egg tree, lacquered.
Get rid of it.
Is that a deal breaker? I mean, it's...
We didn't hear that. We didn't hear that clip, so that my audience have got no idea what you're talking about there.
I went to see the new Stan and Ollie movie.
Stan and Ollie. This is the film
about Laurel and Hardy.
It's a film about Laurel and Hardy. I don't know if in the rest of the world they know them as Laurel and Hardy. In some parts of the world, they're known as like Fat Man and Thin Man and stuff like that. But Laurel and Hardy were a comedy double act from the past, from the black and white era. from the black and white era. Hold on a second, James. Your microphone's gone strange. I'm assuming it's the microphone and not you.
I am quite strange.
You need to go and...
All right.
This is a side effect of your eye infection.
Internal microphone.
How's that?
Yeah, yeah, we're back.
Is that better?
We're back in business. So, Laurel and Hardy, comedy double act from the black and white era of films.
I think it was the mid-30s.
Yeah, in the just sort of
pre-war
period. Depression era, United States. Okay. So, yeah, Laurel and Hardy, you know everyone, don't you? One of them was fat and the other one was
Steve
thin.
Steve Coogan, a.k.a. Alan Partridge, yeah, plays...
Oliver, no, Stan Laurel.
Stan Laurel, the thin one.
Yeah.
And it's a good film. I mean, it's good. It's definitely a good film. It's not great. I mean, maybe it is great, but for me, it was nice. It was pleasant. It was good. It wasn't like mind-blowingly good.
Was it as good as the Alan Partridge film? Alpha Papa.
Completely different.
Right.
Very hard. That's like saying what's, I don't know, you just can't compare them.
Right. But Alpha Papa's pretty good though, isn't it?
Alpha Papa's pretty good. I mean, there's more laughs in Alpha Papa.
Definitely.
Olive, Stan and Ollie was good kind of Sunday evening tele premiere on terrestrial TV on a sort of, you know, cozy Sunday movie.
I'm imagining some sort of movie channel on TV. This is Premiere Film Channel.
Or it would be probably, yeah, I mean, it was good.
Film
was
Sunday.
Very well acted. And
Sunday film premiere, story. Stan and Ollie at 4 p.m. on BBC Two.
On Central. Coming up, Stan and Ollie. Steve Coogan and whatever the other guy's name is. Here on Central.
Saturday night at 9 p.m. on BBC One. The premiere, the terrestrial television premiere of Stan and Ollie, starring Steve Coogan, Saturday night at 10 on BBC One.
Open another bottle of imported Belgian beer and put your feet up. You're not going anywhere.
It's the Saturday evening
movie.
It's the Saturday evening movie on ITV 2.
Followed by 6 hours of adverts. Normally this film lasts 120 minutes. Tonight on Channel 4, on whatever.
It's going to last 240 minutes because of advertising content.
Which is much louder than the actual film.
Yeah.
We challenge you to enjoy this movie. Because you're not going to. The first 20 minutes are ad-free, and then they'll come in thick and fast. Don't you worry.
By
the end, you'll want to throttle that girl from the Trivago advert.
There are also annoying little sponsored idents at the beginning and ending of the ad breaks.
Which often don't flag themselves up quickly. So you think you're watching the movie, then you realise you're actually watching a branded ident for Audi. God.
All right,
that's why people don't watch telly anymore.
Yeah, because of the shocking advertising you get. But online, you get terrible ads as well at the beginning of YouTube videos.
Yeah, they're pretty bad, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty annoying.
It's normally a banjo.
Jing, 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 jing. Our new interest-free loans.
Jing, 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 jing.
For your little nipper.
Or there'll be someone doing some gardening. None of us are getting any younger, but with the so-and-so insurance plan, I can make sure that there's one for my little seedlings when I'm pushing up daisies.
When I'm pushing up the daisies. So this is, listeners...
Jing, 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 jing. It's peace of mind, and it's only £12 a month. There'll be no medical and no salesperson with call, and you'll get a free Parker pen just for inquiring. Jing, 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 jing. Ah!
Yeah, and then it's a furniture advert where they advertise the furniture by saying the numbers, like no one ever says numbers. This new sofa, this new three-piece suite, just £399. It's like, what?
What?
You mean £399?
You mean £400.
Yeah, you mean £400. Yeah, this new Canon, what would it be? Like
this new Canon home all-in-one printer, Only £3. The cartridges are £500.
Yeah, star asterisk. By £3, we actually mean £300. This new Canon Inkjet 3000 from just £299. From £299.
No, they're really... That's the thing with printers. You can get a printer for about £30 now.
Yeah, okay.
Ink is what gets you. They get you on the ink. That's their plan.
The ink has become the most valuable liquid on Earth.
It really is. You can buy the bootleg ink off eBay and it scabs up.
Ink is getting so expensive that in a few years there'll be like the ink wars of like 2020, you know, to 2024.
You may joke about it now, but we'll see. This will probably be pulled out of a sort of iPod Nano into 2000 years and they'll break it. Oh, we found a way to access this data. It's this random stupid podcast and they're talking about the ink wars. Little did they know.
Well,
in 20 short years, those ink wars were set to destroy the planet.
Yeah, exactly, because the ink is getting so expensive. There will be, you know, like countries will wage war over the ink reserves of wherever ink is made. I don't know.
The CMYK wars.
The Schaefer versus...
2067.
Pentel versus Parker. Anyway... So,
is this the kind of stuff that you think is hitting the golden?
Yeah, but you see, the thing you have to do is when you've...
What is it called? The sweet spot. Do you really think this is in the sweet spot?
But what you have to do is when you've gone a bit too far, you have to immediately
rein it in.
Bring the ship back on course.
Okay, well, that's what we're doing now.
Okay, so you saw the Stan and Ollie film and you thought it was good. And it's the sort of film that you
could... It was a good film.
It was a good film. The sort of
damning with faint praise.
Yeah. What did you think of the film? I thought it was good. It was fine. It was just good.
It was fine. No complaints from me.
Yeah, it was fine. It was just fine. Yeah, it was fine. Yeah. Anyway, so you saw it was like the kind of film you could watch on a Sunday afternoon on like on BBC One or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, and it will be in about 6 years probably. And tonight our movie premiere, Stan and Ollie, May the Force Be With You. Oh, sorry, wrong film.
Have you read any have you seen any books? I mean, have you read
I've seen a few books.
Have you read any of them? Have you read any books?
Yeah, I've read loads. I read loads of books.
You're a what's the word for it?
An avid bookworm.
A reader of books.
I think you can be an avid bookworm. You're just a bookworm or you're not a bookworm.
Right.
Or you can be an avid reader.
Yeah.
I don't think you can really be an avid bookworm.
Right, okay.
You can.
Be clear.
No, you're the language expert. You tell me.
No, you're right. Yeah, absolutely right.
You don't say you're an avid bookworm. You say I'm an avid reader.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a bit of a bookworm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a way of saying I'm quite clever.
Absolutely right.
Even though all the books I read are about like rock and roll bands and stuff, so aren't very clever.
Right, the very easy stuff to get
very
through.
Very easy rock biographies, very big writing.
Very big letters so that their fans can read them.
Yeah, I'll tell you what the worst for that is, the Princess Diaries.
Wait, what's the Princess Diaries?
The Carrie Fisher book.
Uh-huh.
I got about a quarter of the way in, if that, and it was just so basic. I just couldn't face any more.
What do you mean, so basic?
Just really badly written. I mean, I guess it had been cobbled together. It was obviously spoken out loud and someone transcribed it. I don't think she sat down at a typewriter and actually typed it all out.
Uh-huh.
So maybe we should blame her biographer.
Yeah.
But it felt like a children's book. That was one classic, very big words, very big font.
Yeah.
And quite thick pages.
Okay. So there's nothing to it. Right.
And maybe I should have stuck with it, but I got a bit infuriated with it and didn't. I think I took it to the charity shop.
Okay. Why did you take it to the charity shop?
Because, it's better than burning it.
Yeah, I know.
Because I'm a good, you know, like recycling type person. I think it came from a charity shop originally as well. So.
The point being that you can give the book to the charity shop and they will take it and then sell it.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Okay.
What else have I read? That's one I don't recommend. I did read the Alan Partridge book, Nomad.
Okay.
Which is really funny. And there's at least a laugh on every page, which is saying something.
Yeah.
but it really is packed with really stupid situations and Alan humour that you'll either love or you won't love. But I thought it was brilliant, really, really funny.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's so ridiculous. Yeah. And he still maintains this kind of aloof persona where he's not quite in touch with himself.
Yeah, he still thinks he's an A-list broadcaster.
It's not quite that. It's just he's got such a weird self-image. I don't know what he thinks he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he gets himself into some really stupid situations.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of these travelogue books where they travel across the Andes or something and learn about themselves as they go. But he's just walking to Dungeness and back, and he doesn't even do it.
Yeah.
He keeps stopping in hotels and having his shoes stolen and
the principle of the book is that Alan has decided, like, after his father dies, but it's not even after his father has died, it's a really bad premise
for the walk. Yeah, and he keeps on stating this isn't for a book, this is to honor my father, and he keeps stating that so many times, like, okay, we get it, it's not to do with the book deal,
because in the UK we get things like these deep and meaningful TV shows or books that people write, and they're all about like these journeys that they've taken, in very personal journeys.
It's always a personal journey, and it's always about a relation, like, oh, my mother, and a personal connection to a place.
Yeah.
So they're always like, my mother loved, Sleaford,
yeah,
because her grandmother was born there, and she used to work in the local corner shop, and whenever I see it on the map, I always think of my mum, and I wanted to pay her, except more than that.
And they do
always, they just lay on thick, and they do a
road trip to this place, and it's, the whole thing is filmed, and there's lots of like revealing like monologues to the camera and sort of meaningful visits to different places and things, and it's like an emotional road journey into the soul, you know. And so this book, Nomad,
they can be a bit cheesy.
A bit cheesy and a little bit contrived.
A bit contrived and a bit insincere sometimes.
You get the impression that they're trying to push the emotional angle a bit too hard in order to make an engaging TV show.
And they're kind of contriving a situation where that happens to involve a very photogenic road trip that will just happen to make a nice 6-part series.
Yeah, so these are the real shows that we see on TV sometimes, the kind of typical stuff that you get these days. But the Alan Partridge book is where Alan, it's, you know, has basically decided he's going to make one of these shows.
And it's kind of taking the piss out of Alan, but it's also taking the piss out of that genre of self-discovery road trip type TV shows, and it's kind of poking fun at that at the same time as having fun with putting Alan into these silly situations.
And he decides to go on a long walk in order to honor his father, but it turns out that it's in fact his father, because he's talking about, I'm going to do this walk because my father did this walk once, but then it turns out actually you realize that his father never actually did do the walk.
And it's such a tenuous link, but that's part of the humor anyway. Let's what else have I read?
Did you read the Beastie Boys book?
Yes, which is absolutely brilliant as well.
Okay, so listeners, I mean, the Beastie Boys were famous around the world, weren't they? They were.
I'd say so. I mean, it's funny, some people still don't really know them that well. I think we, sort of us two, are born of that generation.
Yes.
But the younger people don't really know them as well as I'd expect them to.
Yeah.
But for us, they were kind of like our Beatles. As weird as that sounds.
Yeah, no, they were.
Kind of, as a group that you grew up with, and they evolved as you got older and you kind of grew up with them.
Yeah.
And they started out as a bit of a kind of teeny sort of bopper kind of band, or slightly. They were in danger of being
a gimmick,
seen as one dimensional.
Yeah.
But then they evolved as they went along. I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a weird comparison, but...
No, I get it. But, I was such a huge fan of the Beastie Boys in the 90s, and they were, of all the bands, I mean, they were from the United States, they were from New York, and obviously we were growing up in the countryside in the middle of England, quite different worlds. But for some reason, I felt like I identified with the Beastie Boys more than I did with all of the British bands that were around at the time.
Yeah. And those bands were bands that we were supposed to be into, like Oasis and Blur. I found them a bit... didn't really relate.
I just found them annoying at the time. Nowadays, I look back at bands like Blur and Oasis, and I can enjoy them and appreciate them. But at the time...
There's a few good Blur songs. I could probably make a sort of Blur CD that I liked. Yeah. Six tracks that I like by Blur, but they've never been my band.
Yeah, and also
the Beastie Boys felt like my band or our band.
I felt like they spoke the same language as me. We were on the same wavelength, you know. Yeah. And the thing is about them, they had really broad musical tastes. So the Beastie Boys, they played hardcore punk rock music. They played hip hop. And they did this instrumental jazz kind of funk stuff as well.
Booker T sort of influenced.
Yeah, like Blue Note
kind of
jazz.
Slow, groovy, kind of weird sort of double bass.
And Hammond organ.
Sleazy nightclub kind of music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were very funny as well. They never took themselves seriously.
Exactly. That was the thing about them. They were flipping hilarious and they never took themselves too seriously, whereas our bands in Britain at the time,
it was just one big pose.
Everyone was posing and everyone was trying to be too flipping cool, and some of them were great. I mean, like Pulp were
They're fantastic. They don't deserve to be called a Britpop band because they're better than that.
Jarvis Cocker,
they're on their own, really.
Yeah,
Pulp
were the best.
They're more of an art school band that went stadium.
Yeah, they were amazing.
They're great. Yeah. But I never felt like they were my band.
No,
I never felt
me neither.
They were speaking to me. They were great music and they were always on everywhere. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing those big Pulp singles.
Yeah.
On the pub, on the TV, on the radio, in people's houses. You just hear it all the time.
Yeah.
Same with Oasis. I never had to buy an Oasis CD because it was just on everywhere.
We're in Oasis.
Yes. And you could hear Oasis on the telly pretty much every day if you particularly wanted to, or on the radio all the time. Everyone had them CDs.
But the Beastie Boys
never felt like they were talking to you directly.
Yeah. They were our band and they were on our wavelength. They just were, because everything was flipping hilarious and they were just
a much cooler version of what you were at that time.
And
they
had all the clothes that I thought were the coolest clothes, and their taste was impeccable.
They were good sort of taste makers. If you heard a reference to something in a Beastie Boys tune, you could check it out safe in the knowledge that it was going to be really good.
Yeah, they were into all the cool stuff.
Anything they mentioned, you'd be like, you could look it up. And when you couldn't look it up in those days, there was no internet.
Yeah.
But if you saw it in a record shop, you'd be like, oh, that's that thing that they mentioned. I'll probably buy that, see what that's like.
Yeah.
They were reliable. They were very good judge of culture for us.
Consistent, yeah, and just hilarious. And also the tunes, like the first time I heard Paul's Boutique, which is their second album, I heard it a few years after it was released. I heard it after I'd bought
that's the same for nearly everyone.
Yeah, like the middle of the 90s.
Kind of got a bit sick of them after the first album because it was a bit of a joke.
Yeah,
and the joke wasn't really that funny in the first place. And after you'd heard Fight for Your Right to Party a few times, it was just like, yeah, novelty record.
Mm.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't even think anything about it. You just ignored it after a while.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing Paul's Boutique came out, but I never bought it because everyone was like, who gives a toss about the Beastie Boys? They're those just annoying guys.
Yeah.
One hit wonder.
Yeah.
But then you hear a couple of years later, someone pass it on to you and you're like, geez, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And it was well ahead of its time as far as rapid sampling and kind of mixtapes of like a collage, a musical collage.
Mm. Taking
samples
from loads of really great funk and jazz records and hip hop, and even sampling the Beatles. I don't know how they got away with sampling the Beatles on that album. They sampled Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Before the legalities were really worked out on sampling, possibly.
I don't know how they got
away with
it.
There were still rules about very short samples were okay and stuff in those days. I might be wrong.
But then also the band...
But there were such short songs on Paul's Boutique as well. It really felt like frenetic.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
A very frantic collage with things coming at you every few seconds. There'd be a new sample or a new groove. And
yeah,
the songs were kind of hidden all amongst this big wedge of very dense, very lyric intense
party music. It's about 90 minutes long, but the number of samples in there, it means it's like an incredibly dense mixtape with millions, but loads and loads and loads of different samples and things. So it's very, very rich, but not the kind of thing that would sell millions of records like their first album. But then after that, they went to Los Angeles and they kind of created their own studio that was, for me, when I read about it, it was just like my ideal place. It was like my dream when I was 19. Yeah, they had a recording studio
in their house
with all their musical instruments. But then they also had stuff like they had a basketball court,
skate ramp.
Yeah. Computer.
It's
games.
Like every kid's dream, really.
Yeah.
And they were being super creative. It's not like they were just going, "Hey, we're rich. Hey, la la la, we've got flash cars and bollocks like that."
Yeah.
It was like, we're using this opportunity to be completely creative in as many ways as possible.
Yeah, it was so cool.
It were never about showing off. They were always about, because that's the problem with all that sort of culture now. It's so passive. Like, okay, you're rich. Now what?
Mm.
You've got a designer handbag. Big deal. Now what? What are you going to do with it? Look at it. It's like where they were, everything was a massive creative explosion.
Yeah, it's so
in
brilliant.
Millions of directions, and they had their own, they had their own distribution company for other bands, and they had all sorts of little things going on.
Yeah, so the Beastie Boys book is basically their story told by the two surviving members of the group.
Yeah, MCA, rest in peace.
MCA, rest in peace. Exactly, he died in 2012, sadly. But so it's the two other guys, Adam Horovitz and Michael Diamond.
Picture book. It's kind of medium size, quite thick book.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of photos. But I mean, when I first asked for it for Christmas, it's not even that expensive. It's like 25 quid. But I kind of thought it would be more like a picture book. I didn't realize it would have such extensive text as well. The whole story of the band from before they were signed, when they were just kids. Skateboarding and going to punk gigs and stuff to all the way up to now, basically, or up to the end of the band.
And it's full of stories as well. It's just full of anecdotes and stories throughout their career. And they've been very selective, again, with really good taste. They've just chosen the best stories that they could remember and put them down in this book. And it's full of very funny moments. But I didn't read the book because I've got terrible reading habits these days. And I just do audio books now. So I'm just like listening to books when I'm walking around. And I got the audio book version of the Beastie Boys book. And it's amazing because... it's read out by Adam and Mike, but also it's read out by all these other people. They've like got these actors and other people to read out different chapters of the book. So
is that funny?
It's brilliant. Yeah, it's a bit confusing because sometimes you don't know who is talking.
Yeah.
Like if it's Barbara Streisand who's reading one of the chapters.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's she is brilliant as well. She's so funny. She's absolutely brilliant at reading the stories. But Barbara Streisand reads a couple of chapters.
I
don't know if it's Adam or Mike. And there are other people, like a lot of comedians from the States, people like Will Ferrell is one of them. And who's that guy from Reservoir Dogs, the guy with the funny looking guy from Fargo and Reservoir Dogs, you know? Steve Buscemi and Chuck D from Public Enemy reads one of the chapters. LL Cool J reads one of them.
He's got a cool voice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, because it's written by the Beastie Boys, it's full of their kind of slang and the kind of attitude and delivery. It's fucking hilarious. I was listening to it. And I was cracking up all the time at all the stories. One of the things though I wanted to ask you about was, obviously there's the whole thing about being in a band, which we're going to have to save for another time. But maybe we can just end with this one. There's a chapter in the book which is all about making mixtapes and Ad Rock. It's right at the beginning of the book. Ad Rock wrote a chapter. Adam Horovitz wrote a chapter about how we all used to make mixtapes for each other and how we used to listen to our music on cassettes, right? These old C90s and C60 cassettes, right? I mean, we've been through various format since then. We went from cassette to mini disc and CD and now into MP3 and stuff like that. But back in the 90s, we were all going around with cassettes and Walkmans and making cassette mixtapes for each other.
I really got into that that chapter. It was very good.
Yeah. So,
and Adrock, he says his optimum tape length is 60 minutes. Because I thought that's actually probably quite true, but I always used to go for a 90.
Me too.
It's just more with music.
Yeah.
But listening to a whole 90 in one setting, in sitting, is probably a bit too much.
A 90, the thing is, if you give someone a 90-minute compilation tape that you've made, it's kind of a big ask, in a sense, for that person, because are they going to listen to the entire 90 minutes? They're going to listen to 45 minutes and then flip the tape and listen to the rest. And if you give them a 60, you've got a lot more chance of them listening to the entire thing and getting into it.
More impact if you're more selective with your selections.
Yeah.
But 90, you can get a bit lost.
Yeah.
You can lose focus.
Yes, exactly. But a 60, it tends to, it's a bit more focused.
I mean, my DJ mixes, I bought one of your little recommended MP3 recorders.
Yeah.
Shall I name it?
Yeah.
They might send you a free one.
Yeah, they should flipping send me a free one because I use all of their stuff. It's a Zoom
H1N.
Okay, Zoom, I know you're listening to this. Zoom, I use Zoom products and I think that they're great.
You're actually using a Shure microphone right now.
I'm using a Shure microphone, but it's going into a Zoom H5.
Oh, right, okay.
And I've got a Zoom camera as well.
You should hit them up, man. Hey, guys, got a great opportunity here for you. I've got one of the best in the world English language podcasts. I've been running it for about 10 years now, about 12 years, actually.
I've got a great outreach
across major territories. And I think we can really work together on the brand, pushing outwards, moving forwards. So why don't you just hit me up on my usual, I'm on all the social medias, all the ads.
Hit me up on the socials, guys.
Get back to me on social media, and we'll talk. Okay, ciao, bye.
Let's talk about some branded,
content.
Branded marketing push going forwards, guys, okay?
I mean, we've got some great content lined up that we can sync you guys into. it'd be a great cross-brand interaction process. And we all know, we can reach and really hit some big numbers with this, guys. So, Zoom, we'd love to have you on board. Get in touch with Luke here at the podcast, and we'll talk money.
Exactly. Okay, Zoom, that's the kind of shit that we can
provide for you
going forward. So just we'll stick that up the flagpole and see who dances to the beat,
pipers piping.
We've got some fat beats that we can really throw out across the airwaves here, Zoom, and I think it's gonna it's gonna be a mutual partnership for both of us, guys.
Brand collaborations are really on trend this year, and we just really think that together, a combined forces of Luke's English Podcast and Zoom could really take this to the next level, the next plateau.
Oh, God. So you've been using the Zoom H1, which is a handy little recorder.
Which is a handy pocket-sized device with an inbuilt stereo twin mic. And audio input. I wouldn't have had to bother buying it, but Apple, in their infinite wisdom, removed the simple audio import on their desktop model, and replaced it with some unfathomable shit.
Yeah, which obliges you to buy
some peripheries.
You have to buy a wizard, like an actual wizard. You need Gandalf to help you to actually plug.
Why didn't they just leave that little socket? You know, a small pin. Do you know what I mean? What are they on?
Yeah, they're on
Apple. What are you doing?
Yeah,
greed
in its purest form. Did you not read the Old Testament, Steve Jobs?
Come on, he's not around.
He's
anymore.
In the
That's
Old
the
Testament
problem.
Now, isn't he?
He is the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
This is where we bring it back.
This is where we realize. So find yourself editor, turn it off, then turn it back on again.
Yeah, quick, turn the editor on, quick. So anyway, you've been using Zoom.
So anyway, I've noticed that about an hour and 5 minutes seems to be the optimum mix length.
For making a music mix.
I mean, a radio show, you can go on a bit longer, but I'm not doing a radio show. I'm just doing all music, all hits, here on Luke's Radio, Rock Radio.
All killer, no filler on Luke's
all the
Rock
time,
Radio.
24 hours a day.
Yeah.
But after an hour, you kind of start to get a bit tired. You need to sit down.
Mm.
No, but I mean, listening back to it, after an hour, you're kind of, how many people really got an attention span of longer than an hour? I mean, even on a long journey, after an hour, you're probably going to want to listen to something else.
Mm.
Mm. So an hour and 15 for a sort of dance mix. But I think I made a ska mix the other day and it came in around about 46 minutes and that felt about right.
Yeah. So you think that Ad-Rock is right about the C60?
Yeah, basically where this is all rambling on from is that the C60 probably is the best tape length for making your friend a mixtape.
Yeah.
And we've been doing it wrong all these years, doing the 90.
Yeah, man.
But the only good thing with the 90, you treat it as two 45-min chunks.
Yes, that's right.
I don't know. And it's also a 90, yeah. It's flawed. It's a flawed tape length.
I was going.
What about 120s?
Remember them? No. You know what's the thing?
Very
about
a rare beast.
Thing about a 120 is that
they can't maintain their tightness.
Danger. They will always get chewed up in a tape player. The 120 cassettes never survived. They would always end up getting all chewed up.
They were very rare at the best of times.
Yeah, and the quality.
I used to like the chrome ferric tapes, the really heavy black chrome ferric.
Oh yeah,
like Mitsubishi or TD, some sort of obscure techie sort of
Japanese
brand.
Japanese company.
Yeah, Japanese quality. Or the Sony ones that had the little flush cases.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, very nice.
Just before the cassette sort of got went redundant, the cassette was at its best, right? They were producing those lovely, slick, heavy, chrome cassettes and shit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
With a very sleek cases that didn't spring apart quite so easily,
but
and they were quite, and they, some of them had a smoked finish to the plastic, like a grey, dark grey, smoky, hue,
smoky lady.
Well, fancy that. That's the fast joke.
So here are some of the things I thought about when I was listening to that. So there's the thing about, so nowadays you've got your Spotify or you've got, you know, MP3s on your iPhone or whatever it is. And you don't need to think about, you know, leaving the house. You've got all your music with you all the time. But back in the days when we had Walkmans and cassettes, you would have to like select the tapes that you would bring with you on that particular day. And I remember going to college, like choosing the cassettes that I'd bring with me. And I'd put I only had a limited amount of space. So I could fit two in the front pocket of my bag. I could fit one cassette in the top pocket of my jacket, and then maybe one cassette in the other pocket of my jacket. So I've got four cassettes, you know, that's my playlist for the day, basically.
Quite a lot. I'd normally take one in the Walkman and have one extra.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a kind of reasonable amount to have.
Yes, I think
so. I remember getting in people's cars and opening the glove box, and they're just piles and piles of loose tapes and boxes.
Yeah.
Like that sort of Lego noise of like, just like, oh, it's in here somewhere. Ching. Oh, found it.
Yeah.
Randall live at Dreamscape. Wicked. This is brilliant. You can love this one.
Right. Right. Also, if you wanted to listen to, like, let's say side two of the mixtape that you had with you,
tough shit. Listen to side one first.
Yeah, but you're at the beginning of side one, and you can't just fast forward or rewind
on your Walkman.
It'll kill the batteries. So what I learned to do was stick a biro pen into one of the cogs of the tape and spin the tape round on the end of the pen. So I spent a lot of time
manual rewinding
when I was a teenager, manually rewinding cassettes that I wanted to listen to, and I just,
is that what you were doing up in your bedroom?
Yeah, tick 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 tick. Yeah, I was rewinding cassettes
manually.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mum, I'm just manually rewinding.
That's right. I'll be down in a minute. Let me just finish manually rewinding my cassettes.
This Paul's Boutique cassette.
Yeah. No, on the bus and stuff. On the bus. So I'd be
cheap.
Obviously cheap cheap gag that you made there. Cheap gag there, everyone. But yeah, spinning tapes on the end of pens was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
That, and also, yeah, if your favorite tape gets chewed up by a crappy tape machine, then you'd have to do emergency surgery on the cassette. Have you ever done emergency surgery on a cassette?
Yes, I have.
So just talk me. Just talk me through that process.
If you're really serious about this tape, you can actually take it out of the housing and put it into another tape housing, but that's extremely advanced.
The transplant.
Total tape transplant to another body. I don't know if I've ever successfully performed that operation, because there's normally some bits left over that you find out as essential and the tape get clogged up. I've done minor tape repairs where you open the tape, or maybe you just take the tape out, cut out the affected bit, which is all crunched up, and stick the two bits back together with some sellotape, a tiny bit of sellotape.
And then you need to re-record that tape to another tape, because you can't go around with a piece of tape with a tape that's got a bit of sellotape in it.
If you tape it well enough, it'll last.
Always the chance that's going to get chewed up again, isn't it?
I've never gone as far as re-recording that tape.
Just re-record the tape is always the best plan. Don't risk it, man.
Okay.
But yeah, okay.
I've still got some tapes in my kitchen, quite a few, and they're still in pretty good nick.
Have you got any tapes for you? Have you got any of the mixtapes?
Yeah, I've got that Luke's Master Mix where you're talking over funk breaks.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
That's from 2001.
And you were doing pause tapes.
Yeah.
Which is another thing, a mixtape thing. Before you had a sample, well, if you couldn't afford a sampler,
yeah,
you play a loop of a record, pause it right on the right point, rewind the CD or the tape, unpause it, pause it again, and you're taking that one loop of break or a funk loop and just trying to record it so it syncs together into a seamless loop.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got
very, very difficult.
You've got a tape player with a tape that you're recording onto, and you hit record and you play the section of the record or the CD that you want recorded, and at the right at the end of that section you've got to time it right so it lands on the offbeat or whatever. You hit the pause button on your tape deck, rewind it to the beginning of that loop and unpause and play the record, and you can keep doing that, and you end up with a long looped section where it's just that piece of the record again and again and again. And it could be like the drum break or a particular good bit that you just repeat over and over and over again. And yeah, hip hop rap men used to do those tape loop things, and then they would rap.
Yeah.
They would rap over the top of them. Legend has
DJ Scratch, who's quite a famous hip hop DJ.
I don't know him personally, but
he recently found a load of his tapes and he put them up on social media, and they had quite a lot of those pause tapes.
Yeah.
Where he'd make a whole, say, 5 or 6 minutes of one loop, mm-hmm. which must have taken hours of rewinding, rewinding the original tape.
I did the Classic Breaks Mega Mix, which I did in 2001, and it's 60-minute. It was a 60-minute tape, and it was exclusively made out of pause. What do you call it? Pause mixes or whatever.
But pause tape.
I had my PlayStation, which I was using as a CD player, and I had a Sharp mini disc recorder, and that's what I used as my. I used the mini disc, and I created a 60-minute pause tape mixtape using the method that we just talked about. And I had a whole stack of all of. I had a lot of time on my hands at the time, and I made a huge pile of all of my jazz and funk CDs, and I went through every single one and I picked out the best loops and the best bits from all of them, and I looped them and just moved on to the next one and the next one, and it ended up with a 60-minute mix, which I had on the mini disc. And then I played the mini disc into my tape machine, and I plugged a pair of headphones into the microphone input. And that, if you put headphones into a microphone input, it will turn the headphones into a microphone. I don't know how.
Still don't know how that
I don't
works.
Know how that works, but
something
it works.
Something to do with electromagnets.
Something. So I was speaking into this headphone, recording myself emceeing over the whole 60-minute mix, and I decided that I would take on the persona of this like New York DJ kind of guy. And the whole welcome to the Classic Breaks Mega Mix. And I did that whole thing, and I was like doing shout outs to like people.
Do you want me to record it? Because I've got a little tape.
I've got it, man. I've got it on Mixcloud.
Have you?
Yeah, I cleaned it up. So I put it into GarageBand, and it was years ago before I had GarageBand. When I had a PC, I put all the tracks up, and I actually edited it and cleaned it up a bit. So some of the loops are even better than they were before. Oh, so
you cleaned it up like that.
Cleaned it up a bit, yeah. So it's on Mixcloud, and I'll stick the mix on the page for this episode. But listeners, if you do listen to it, you should know it's pretty stupid, and you'll hear me. I mean, I think it's quite.
It's actually
funny.
Quite annoying.
Is it quite
it's
annoying?
Funny to me? No, it's funny to me. I'm just warning them. Don't expect.
Yeah,
great things.
I distributed it to my friends, and that everyone enjoyed it. That I distributed it. Well, some people never spoke to me again, but some people said they found it funny. But anyway, you can listen to it on Mixcloud if you want. Right. Well, you know what? I think that we're going to have to draw this episode to a close.
Oh, mega ramble.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's kind of. That's fun, isn't it?
It was quite fun.
Yeah.
It was quite good.
It was fine. It was just fine for a Sunday afternoon.
It's not a Sunday afternoon.
No, it's a Thursday evening. But you should listen to it on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, ideally.
Yeah.
With some Jaffa cakes.
Jaffa cakes, which are...
Oh, why did I say that? I want a Jaffa cake.
That's half an hour's worth of podcasting as well we'd have to do just to explain what Jaffa cakes are.
Just Google it.
Just Google
it, Lynn.
Just Google it, Lynn. Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to us on the podcast again. I think that my listeners will be like, oh, James on the podcast. That's nice. And some of them will be like, who's James?
Because some of them will be like, oh, God.
Not again.
There's that man again. The man with a child in his eyes.
Is that? That's another Alan Partridge reference.
That's another. We're just... slipped into full Partridge accidentally.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, let's stop this now and
okay.
And just go back to our normal lives.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks. Anyway, really though, thanks for being on the podcast again.
It's all right. Cheers.
You should say something to my audience and say goodbye to them and stuff like that.
I hope you're all well. Well, apparently you're supposed to speak to people as an individual when you're doing sort of radio type things. So you're not supposed to go, bye everyone. You're supposed to go speaking to your listener. Dear listener, thank you for listening. I hope you're doing well. I hope that little medical issue you've got clears up. And hope you have a really good day / evening / night. And go in peace.
Yeah. Go forth. What is it?
And multiply.
Go forth and multiply. Go forth and
prosper. Is that what it is?
No, it's
live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
I think that's one from the Bible. Go forth and multiply. That's God. I was getting God and Spock mixed up.
Okay, thanks for adding that sincere message at the end there.
Okay, that's all right.
All right.
Just, just take it easy, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Okay, everyone, just take it easy, all right?
Yeah.
If you're driving home, just drive safe, okay? Remember, if you're driving tonight, don't drink, and if you're drinking, don't drive. Thanks a lot for listening to the late night radio show here on Luke's English Podcast with James in London and Luke in Paris. You have yourselves a great evening, guys, okay? Thanks a lot for tuning in. We'll be back on the radio, back in your headphones or your speakers before you can say,
I think you should cut this bit out as well.
I'm trying to end this in a good way, which I can't do.
All right. Thanks for having me, Luke. Bye.
Pleasure. Bye-bye then. So there you are. Thanks again to James for coming back on the podcast. Leave your comments on the website in response to any of the things that came up in this conversation. Generally, we would love to know what you're thinking, unless you're thinking something really disgusting, in which case, please keep that to yourself.
So we talked a bit about books there. For me, I tend to use audiobooks these days. I just can't seem to find the time to actually do much normal reading. So I use Audible for my audiobooks, and I just wanted to remind you that they actually sponsor this podcast, Audible. And in fact, they have an offer that you could take advantage of, and that's a free audiobook of your choice. Audible have a free app which you can get on your phone. Audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E. They've got a free app, and the way it works is you buy the audiobooks on Audible's website or on Amazon, and then the app kind of connects to your Audible or Amazon account. And so you can download the audiobooks onto your app, and then you can listen to them anywhere. It's a really cool way to consume books while doing other things, and often the books are read out by interesting people like talented actors and voiceover artists. So about that offer from Audible, basically they are offering you a 30-day free trial that includes a free audiobook of your choice. And if you like, you can just sign up for the free trial, get the audiobook, download it, listen to it, and then you can cancel your subscription before the end of the 30-day trial, and you don't pay anything, right? Now, you can do that. You could just do that, just take advantage of the 30-day trial, including the audiobook, and cancel, and just keep the book. And Audible are totally cool with that. That's fine. Or you could keep the subscription and get more books, including one book each month as part of your package. So there's an idea. You could listen to the Alan Partridge audiobooks, which are read out by Steve Coogan himself and are genuinely hilarious. Or if you're a Beastie Boys fan, check out the Beastie Boys audiobook, which is amazing in my opinion. To get the offer and for all the details, go to teacherluke.co.uk/audiobook. Also, you could consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium at teacherluke.co.uk/premium. to get the benefit of my teaching skills as I focus on teaching you vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation. New premium episodes come out every month, and I expect to do a premium episode focusing on language that came up in this conversation with James. In fact, there should be a premium episode coming soon about this one. So you can use my premium episodes to maximize your English learning with my podcast, teacherluke.co.uk/premium. But for now, that's it. Congratulations on making it to the end of another super long episode in 2019. Do live long and prosper. And please remember to be excellent to each other. I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.